what's happening, what's going on in Sharkland. This is Eric from the Shark School with another episode of Let's Talk Shark. In the last few episodes, we talked about the old and very much outdated three-group classification of how sharks supposedly, quote-unquote, attack. Bump and bite, hit and run, and sneak. The basic summary of this classification is total BS. So why is this thing still alive? Why are we still finding this on the internet? Well, the problem is that too many people nowadays feel the need to create their own websites on sharks. They feel qualified to talk in public about sharks, and all the knowledge is from other mediocre websites and popular shark books. I'm doing a dive show right now, and one of these pseudo-experts approached me and while I questioned his expertise, and Denise was very proud, said, "Eric, I read a few shark books." That was his answer. "I read a few shark books," and now he's considering himself an expert. I mean, what an idiot. Anyway, I've hardly seen any of these pseudo-experts mentioning any peer-reviewed literature for the simple fact that they don't understand what is written there. So why, being that so arrogant, create websites that are just not correct? No offense to anybody out there loving sharks who wants to spread the good word about these animals, but one should be very careful where one gets his or her knowledge from. That is pretty much the main reason why there are so many erroneous information about sharks out there. And, of course, all the ideas why sharks supposedly bite. You can ask pretty much everybody on the street, so why do you think a shark bites? And they give you an answer, nothing is true, but it seems that everybody has an idea. In most cases, when a bite happens, the shark tried to figure out what we are. We have about 80 to 100 incidents per year where exploration makes about 70-80% of all cases. Since this represents about 3/4 or 4/5 of all incidents, now try to put those in these three categories. Anyway, I mean, I'm starting it. Let's just put this three-category classification to rest. So, about 70 to 80% of all cases are of exploratory nature. That makes a lot of sense since sharks don't know what we are. And one of the reasons they stay in our vicinity, or come even close, is to check us out, is to figure out what we could be. So it makes it quite understandable why the majority of bites is exploration. But as we can see easily here, there's a huge difference between showing up, checking us out from far or even close up, and coming that close that a body contact is happening. For a shark to come in that close and grab us with its jaws is 5 times less likely than winning the lottery. Hello. Of course, this comparison does not really fly. Okay, although we always hear it, it does not really fly. But it's a good one, and you know, you can use it more or less. But the good thing is it gives us quite an idea about probability. You may now ask, why are the less abundant land predators bite us more often than sharks? And why those wounds are much worse? Although we can only speculate at this point, the main reason seems that we have joint evolution. A tiger, a lion, or any other of these predators had an evolution where humans, us, in the early forms, were already present. So these predators had millions of years to get used to us. From that viewpoint, wounds are hardly of exploratory and nature, and mostly much more severe because the land predators know what we are. I hope you start to see where I'm getting with all this. Because we are foreigners in the marine realm, the sharks have no idea what we are. They do not have a search image for us. So they won't hear something and then connect it with a mental picture of us, thus create a search image, and start to search for a human being. That's not happening. A shark may now have the courage to come close and try to figure us out, but it will never just rush in and take a bite, although some people claim that they have been bitten that way. I'm still doing some work for the Global Shark Attack file and, of course, interview some of the bite victims. And you would not believe, very often they say, well, you know, the shark just rushed in and bit me. And he asked, do you see the shark coming in? No. So you see where I'm getting with this. There's a false statement, and then it will be spread, because yes, these people are getting interviews from left and right, TVs, whatever, and of course they want to create a story that is worth mentioning. So yeah, who is to blame? The shark. Anyway, that a shark just rushes in never happened. So the shark indeed rushed in. The situation has been triggered by something the person is either doing, has done immediately prior to the bite, or directly affected the shark, like cornering, getting between a shark and some hunted prey, or so on. But although the shark rushes in then, the shark has been there before. So it's not that the shark hears something and just really rushes in and just bites the person. No, the shark has been there before. He has seen that we are there, and then it may create a stray pattern. It is important that we spread the word when a person has been bitten, what the situation was that led to the bite. And more importantly, also let the reader know how low level most of these bites were. A headline about a so-called shark attack, without further explanation, has a different effect than when just mentioning that a shark grabbed the person, causing some superficial cuts. And this is what most exploratory bites are. Superficial cuts and punctures. Of course, it can happen that a person pulls the arm or leg faster out of the mouth than a shark would release us. And of course, this then leads to what is called a secondary wound. And so the wound then looks much worse. But the secondary wound reflects the motion caused by a person. So whenever we look at an exploratory bite, we first separate the primary and secondary wound from each other, and then solely, entirely, focus on the former one. And that is not just true for the smaller sharks, the black tips, the spinners, and all these other little buggers, but as well for bulls, tigers, and even the whites. It is the last few sharks, of course, that are synonymous for all the terror that supposedly lurks below the surface. And it is our duty to debunk this myth. And of course, it's an easier thing is explaining why bites happen on rare occasion and why they are superficial. So we have to spread the word that even these large sharks are confronted with the same problem all the other sharks have as well, the unknown of the human being. I have spent hours upon hours among bulls, tigers, and whites, and never ever did one of these sharks come out of nowhere, moved in, and just bit me. That I've been bitten is true. But even my now rather famous bite started with exploration. In a later show, I will give you a rundown of what really happened in this event, which most of you know already anyway, and they know why, because my spotter didn't do his job. But again, this will be part of another show. We have to rethink the way we see sharks. And that means we have to rethink the way we interpret wounds. They are not these monsters or unpredictable creatures that we make them out to be, and they do not just bite just because we are there. But it is a struggle to spread the true word because of all the nonsense floating out there. This nonsense has been spread to a large extent by some earlier experts of the 70s. It is mind-boggling what some of them wrote in their books about sharks. It is amazing how far off these folks were, but then again, they did not jump in the water with sharks because they themselves thought sharks are dangerous. I guess in one of the next shows, we should highlight and tackle some of the stuff these people said and wrote. And believe you me, some of it is not even ridiculous. It's just plain stupid. That's it for today. Tune in again for another episode of Let's Talk Shark. And remember, when you see a shark out there, have fun, enjoy the moment, and remember, it is a privilege.